All right, so here we are, October 8th. I'm joined by my brother Yudi for an emergency podcast on the situation in Israel. It is the evening of the second days of Sukkot. So Sukkot just finished in America, which means that everyone who observes comes online and sees a whole bunch of savage content floating around. I was actually interested, before we get into it, what was it like? I'm actually in the U.S., but since I'm an Israeli, I only have to keep one day. What was it like for everyone? Because I actually assumed that people were getting some tidbits because, you know, not everyone keeps, and whatever the reason is, but there's probably information floating around, but it's not like people are pulling out their phone to check. What was the atmosphere like? Because, I mean, I'm sure people already heard about it on Shabbos. That means you're going 2 days sitting on shpilkas, probably ruining your Yom Tov. What was it like?
First of all, it was horrible. It was the whole time, and I kept thinking about it, that it's this weird situation where you're... I think for me, there was finally this thing that you can't do, that you want to do so badly. For some people, maybe it's smoking a cigarette. For some people... you know, everyone has their vice, everyone has their thing that, you know, that they're held back by. For this was pure torture. You have no appetite to eat because you're hearing all these rumors. You know, a non-Jew tells someone this, the chaver member, a shomrim, this is going on, that people are like glancing at the non-Jew's phone, trying to like, okay, go to Fox News, go to see it. And Israel put a gag order, so no, it wasn't like real information coming out. And I see now, having looked at everything, I kept thinking to myself, either it's going to be way worse as more and more information comes out. Again, there's still 130 hostages. They're still clearing them out of Israel. So it's still ongoing fully. Nowhere near resolved, but... I was thinking either it's going to be a lot worse or not, or a lot of the stories that we're hearing aren't true.
Right.
And it seems like there was a mix of that. There was a mix of both of that. Okay, so I'm not even going to go into the details. I don't even think that this is an emergency podcast specifically about this one event, this horror show of an event that's... Like it can take forever just to wrap your heads around it. At least normal people, in my opinion. A number of other stuff because you're sitting around. Well, it was Simchas Torah, so you know you're busy in shul, and there's no. It was weird. Nobody wanted to dance. Like you see, everyone's reluctant. You're depressed. You're hearing all this stuff go on. You don't want to. A lot of people weren't drinking. A lot of people weren't eating. What?
I thought it's conflict of interest. I thought it would be so weird. Like, do you celebrate? Do you go dance with the Torah when you know people are being slaughtered actively? So right. Odd.
It was odd. It felt weird the whole time. I wasn't into it at all. I was very, it's one of those things. There's nothing you can do. You're very far away. And even if you were close, there's nothing you can do
right.
Other than support or maybe go help out a little bit with families or this or that. Bring food to the soldiers or whatever. Another thing that struck me, tell me what you think about this, and I told people on Yom Tov, suddenly everyone's becoming a Zionist. And you know what's interesting? That we've done three episodes on Zionism, and if you remember, we never really did modern times Zionism. And I told you then that you can't, because it all changes. Everything changes so much. Week to week, day to day. What are you going to talk about? You talk about something, and here we are. We're going to just talk about an event. But what we can do is kind of give a context to the whole picture of what's going on. In shul, they're running around trying to find one siddur to say Misha Berach for Chayilei Tzahal. Not one siddur has it.
Right.
And I'm like, now you wake up. What about last Shabbos?
Right.
What about the week before that? Why is everyone so patriotic? It's like 9/11 comes, everyone hangs up on American flag. Half the country flies a flag every day. half the country is patriotic all the time. They think about America. They care about America. And but I guess, you know, obviously as human beings, you know, there's a terrible tragedy. I saw in certain people, they were deeply affected. People that are normally happy and loud, and they were so shut down. So shut down. They didn't even, you could see, they don't even want to be there, but they came anyway.
I think this what's happening now and the content that's coming out, it's hitting the public consciousness in a different way. And one of the things that I noticed right away is that they're deliberately, typically Jews don't share pictures of victims, so on and so forth, because honoring the dead, whereas Palestinians do. It's a whole media propaganda thing to take a picture of a baby who was injured in a rocket attack because it gives them support, so on and so forth. So in the past, you'd never see it. And now what you're seeing is actually the opposite. Parents of children who are lost or taken hostage, this and that, are sending out and all that stuff. And a lot of the pictures of what's going on, because social media is so powerful in this regard, and because the terrorists were videoing themselves and everyone has a phone, we're getting content like never before, which means people are going to be affected like never before. And there's actually a conversation to be had regarding this particular point. How much do you want to bury your head in the sand? Do you not look at footage because it's gruesome? And as a consequence, you don't fully ever appreciate how barbaric your neighbors can be and will be if they have the chance to kill you? Or do you see it and understand how you need to prepare? And I was having this conversation with my wife earlier, because we know that most people don't want to see the footage, but they don't either want to talk about preventative measures. They don't want to talk about owning guns and being on the range and learning how to fire a gun. But when your neighbor busts through the fence and they're coming through with rifles, you'll
and
the
kill only you and your kids. They will. They won't hesitate to kill children, women. They won't hesitate. What they believe in is something really strong. The ideology they have is very strong. Certainly something to talk about. You know, awareness, preparedness, all that stuff. I think that you're right. I think it would have prevented if 90% of the residents of those towns had a rifle. All right, and, you know, an old M16 or an old, you know, army rifle, as they're switching to Tavors and others. Give it to the citizens who know how to shoot. It would have been a different story, no question. Yeah, it was early morning, and a large number of those killed were at the that music festival.
Yes.
So they wouldn't have been armed anyway. I don't know why they did a music festival like on the fence with Gaza. It seems a little. It seems weird. I don't know where it is exactly, but it sounds like it was like right there.
I don't know how close it was, but I mean, it's close if you look on a map, but close when enough. You're there, you know.
But anyway, yeah, I don't even want to get the details because so many stuff are going to change, and I don't even know like how a lot of this stuff happened, and we're going to learn over time. There were paragliders, they're saying motorized bicycles, they came in from the sea, they, you know, all this stuff is coming out, but that's not even the point of this. We're not news people trying to dissect the news to understand what went on. A little more of the psychology, the sociology of it, and what, you know, and what's going on. Number one, what you started out with in regards to preventative measures. You know, you live not far. You live in that bottom part of Israel, so it's far enough. Like, you wouldn't have been affected today. You would have probably had sirens and other stuff like that. But, you know, my brother-in-law, Nitivot, is very close to Ofakim. And Ofakim was hit hard. And that's pretty deep into Israel. Obviously, Sderot always gets it, and other closer towns and villages. Be'eri, thank God, the commandos saved 48 hostages just in that village.
Yeah.
They were held there, and they were able to get them, save them alive.
Yeah, I told you before that we need to jump on while our blood is still boiling. And the reason my blood is boiling is primarily because these things are preventative and we have these conversations frequently. You know, when something
a lot of people understand this. People have been talking about stuff like this for a long time, but you get, you know, the politicians, the leaders of the country don't listen. There's a disconnect in.
Unfortunately, I feel like if something is not preventative, it was so out of the ordinary. It's you know, Hashem did this. Now, not to say that Hashem didn't do this, but there's also a huge margin of human incompetency.
Get your act together.
And lack of ishtadlut. And that's where your blood boils. Because, you know, right. 2 months ago, like I told you, I'm sitting with my friend in Ritamim, you know, 70, 80 kilometers from Gaza or wherever it is, having an argument about whether it would be wise to be able to own a rifle.
Useful, right.
And he was arguing on that point.
And a lot of Israelis don't get it. They don't have that American view of, you know, of that.
And this is what I was telling him. And it makes me shake because it's like so accurate. They, and we're going to get into the sociology behind why they live in this fantasy of security and everything, but
they really believe in the military very strongly.
We see the Bedouins have rifles. They're shooting it off at weddings. And Bedouins are my neighbors, okay?
Right.
We know Hamas has rifles. And in other words, your neighbors have rifles and they carry out attacks sometimes with them. So the logic is very simple. If somebody has a rifle, we know they have rifles and they could come kill me with one. Wouldn't I want an equal or stronger force multiplier to be able to have a chance? A pistol with a 50 bullet limit doesn't give me a chance against M16s and M4s with bulletproof vests. Yeah. And the guy is actually an IDF. He was a soldier. He was actually called in today or yesterday for the reserve. And it gave me a little bit of insight into the head of how they think. And so he was sticking up for the Israeli mentality that it's not like America. Like you can't have guns like as if it's a sport. You have to know how to use the gun. I'm not sure you have to know how to use a gun. I know how to use a gun. That's not the conversation.
They very, very, very strongly believe in the security state. In the military, the Israelis generally they worship Tzahal. They worship it. They think it's the end all. It's everything. And Americans generally, especially you know, I'll call them real Americans, love the military, but very individualistic. Let me take care of myself. You don't have, so if the Israeli government is going to be so strict on gun use and owning guns and having guns, and they want to rely on the military to do everything, well, then you can't have stuff like this happen. You know, an empty tank sitting at the fence and four soldiers just hanging out, and these guys just cruise right over? Unheard of. This is a failure. It's a huge failure on the state. You want people to live there. They want people. The Chavrei Knesset come down all the time. They walk around Sderot. Oh, you're such brave people. You're living here under rockets. Protect them. If you're not going to let them have a bunch of guns. So that's one aspect. There's another aspect of, so they kind of idealize also the army. It's a real integral part of the modern Zionist Weltanschauung. Another aspect is, as we're moving more and more into this era, say for the past 20 years, 30 years even, from the Oslo Accords, where it's, you know, it's Israel's been more defensive. So there hasn't been a war since 1973, a real war, tanks, planes, against the real country. 50 years. So Israel's been really doing more. There was Lebanon a little bit, and then another Lebanon. It's all been missions, and then it's been, you know, in Gaza a couple of times, 65 dead soldiers. What do you show for it? Nothing. But the psychology is much more defensive. Wow, we have Iron Dome. They run around the world. You have Bibi growing on how amazing, 90% accuracy. you're putting up an umbrella over your head instead of taking out the garbage who's shooting at you. So you get safe under it. We're safe. They shoot rockets. We have better rockets. But you're not addressing the issue. They shouldn't have to live under the Iron Dome. So there's this weird legitimacy. They're a partner. You know, they're kind of, you know, Hamas, especially the Palestinian Authority. So this is this modern Zionism that we're talking about now, where it's shifting and changing. And it's the right and the left. Same as in America, right, left. They're all on board. It's Rabin, Peres, even Bibi, Sharon gave Gaza back. So right wing, left wing, doesn't matter. What they did was
leading to political pressure.
What?
Caving to political pressure.
Caving to political pressure, but also giving legitimacy to their claim. The second you tell them that a piece of Eretz Yisrael belongs to you, here you go. You get Gaza as your little country there. Now you just told them that it doesn't belong to you. I want more of it. Why shouldn't they think that? We're telling them to think that. So in all of this, Israel's the problem. Not the Arabs. They're the tool that's you know, fulfilling the issue, the problem. But Israel itself is the problem. The leadership of Israel. That the willingness to say it's all mine. Man, we spoke about this also on other podcasts. Being fully aware of if it's yours, it's yours. If the owner, you know, it's not like you own a house and some guy, you know, wants to move in and squat on your land, you give him a piece of your property because you feel bad for him or you want him to take the guard. Well, now that piece of property is his. He wants a bigger piece of property. They're not going to stop coming. It's not going to stop.
So
and again, I'm not even proposing a solution here. I don't. I solution. Somebody's coming into your house. Stop with this weird Christian, you know, turn the other cheek type of cuckoo mentality that Israel's been using for the past, you know, 50 years. They have to do something horrible, you know.
Yeah, so the theology is fascinating, but it's so deep, and we can have a huge conversation about that. But the aspect prior, the complacency, the fantasy of security, the fantasy of safety, is a big portion of how something like this could even come about. I moved to Israel. I'm around it, so I experience it. And when I'm having these conversations just weeks and months ago and on an ongoing basis with friends and family, and there's nothing you could do about it because Israelis really live that way. They really feel like it was a failure of epic proportions in that regard. Now, so I don't know how many details you were able to capture since Yom Tov was over until now. Right now, do you feel, it appears like you feel like this is just going to be another, you know, they'll bomb them. Not much is going to change. Are you getting that impression? After that, I'll tell you what I think is going on. Possibly from a different perspective, but originally I was like, oh, it's just another thing.
I think it's clear. And I'll tell you why, because it ties into what I was saying prior to that, that this is all lead up from Oslo and these accords and these agreements giving legitimacy to the other side. Instead of saying, no, this is all mine. Yeah, you might live here and whatever, but you're not getting any of it. This is my house. So yeah, here you get this, and you get Ramallah, and you get West Bank, and you get Gaza, and it's done. So like we kind of did it for ourselves, Oslo, the worst thing in Israel's history to ever happen, and this is a culmination of that 100%, and all the hard talk now of declared war. It's the first time in 50 years. Literally, who'd you declare war on? Who on whom? On Hamas. So they take out Hamas leadership. Let's say they kill all of them. Then Islamic Jihad takes over. They're there too. And they were part of this too. So who are you declaring war on? They're a partner. We supply them electricity. If they're the enemy, then take them out. If you know what I mean? Bibi didn't say who the enemy is. He didn't name him. This is the enemy, and we're taking out the garbage all the way. Then you can win a war. You can't win a war if it's like they don't know what's coming to them. This is going to be the worst they ever got. He says this every time. They're going to bomb a bunch of stuff, no doubt. And then what? Sukey Tan, they sent in soldiers, 2014, 65 dead soldiers. Where's that resolution? This just happened. And then they sent it again. And then they this, and then they that. You're going to go send these amazing young men into these alleyways of Gaza, the tunnels, and for what? To just come out again after a month, maybe, when enough soldiers die, to be back at the status quo because an agreement was reached between Egypt and Jordan and whatever. This is not declared war. This is not a joke, in my opinion. There's not going to be any war. It's not going to be anything. It's going to be, as usual, bomb a bunch of stuff from the air, maybe send troops in, you know, maybe in 2 days they'll send in some tanks or whatever. And that's it. Going to come out, they're going to come out, going to be right back to where it was.
This is what remains to be seen. So when I first heard about it, also right away, I'm thinking, okay, so some rockets are being shot. Then you find out, no, this was something else. So you start really digging into it. And I believe BB, and I forgot the defense guy, right? So they're making some pretty, pretty harsh statements. And I believe they did. Now, I can't quote you. I'm not a news reporter. I don't remember these types of details perfectly, but I believe I read quotes from them or translated from Hebrew.
I watched this speech.
That they're basically saying now that they will finish Hamas completely and whatever. So that begs the question, are they going to go in boots on the ground? Are they going to fully and completely wipe out Hamas and take complete control again of Gaza as before 2005 or earlier?
What do you think? You think they're going to do that?
I don't know.
Military control over the whole Gaza?
I'm seeing just from the global noise that's around all of this, I'm seeing inclinations of that. But of course, we don't know.
I think it's very hard to believe that they're going to retake control, military control over.
They didn't do it for 19 years, right. You know, 18 years. But
there's going to be dead soldiers every day if they're patrolling the streets in Gaza. Every day you're going to have dead soldiers. And like we saw in America and Iraq, you get to a certain point where there's just too many dead soldiers and you leave. With no gains.
So the question is, and this is, there are even big, you know, American leaders who are supporting this, obviously on the right side, you know, go in, wipe them out. And we're talking about Hamas, obviously. What, I mean, Israel has what, a million soldiers?
They're fully mobilized.
Why can't, and they called in almost all the reservists. I don't know if you saw.
For sure. Yeah,
the US, 100,000, yeah. The U.S. is moving some Navy into the region, you know, to show
support. Yeah,
to show nothing. Support. But I, you know, if something does escalate, I think the fear is that Hezbollah or maybe Syria might get antsy. Or,
not Syria, but certainly Hezbollah. Yeah, they shot rockets today, this morning.
Yeah, they shot some mortars. The question is, theoretically, why can't 100,000 soldiers storm Gaza? Sure, there will be many losses. At this point, it's a holy war. It's almost a necessary war, because if you don't do it today, you have to do it tomorrow. Wipe out Gaza completely and utterly, and only...
What do you mean wipe it out? Destroy, like, every building?
Capture or kill every single Hamas agent or whatever, and a militant, a terrorist, not militant, and then either maintain control, full control, in a sense, like they do in the West Bank or certain parts of it, until there is a leadership that would work with Israel or so. I don't know. But anything shy of completely wiping out Hamas, then we're in the same story.
Yeah, I agree. And they should. This is what they should do. It should be biblical. Going in, completely taking apart that organization, nuts to bolts, whatever it takes, and everyone's behind it. Right now, the whole country's behind it fully. Find every single hostage, blow up every tunnel, go through the place. Yeah, there's going to be a lot of dead civilians, and Israel has to be ready for that, you know, condemnation and hate and world, you know. Other than that, don't even bother.
Yeah,
or just bomb from the air. Just bomb, precision strikes. It does nothing. We see it does nothing because they do it all the time. They've been doing it for 20 years.
Yeah. No, so that's the big question now. Is that going to take place or not? If it doesn't, then it's just another, like, you, then it's like you're predicting it's just a bunch of blah, blah, blah again, and we got nowhere. So that's
what I have a feeling it's just going to be that.
If they go
boots on the ground. I want it to be a complete makeover.
If they go in boots on the ground, serious about wiping them out, it may turn into a serious war where other countries get involved, and then this could go on for weeks or months.
Yeah,
a Russia-Ukraine situation.
Right.
Okay, so that's that aspect of it. Now, there's so many little details and things that took place. First of all, I heard just recently, so they had about 35 drones, little drones, that dropped the rockets on the tanks. And they actually took video of it. I have video of it. I tried posting it on YouTube, but YouTube yanks everything that I pulled that's produced by Hamas because of violent policy or whatever. So I'm trying to post a lot of the stuff that goes around because they yank this stuff from the internet. But the stuff coming that Hamas produces, they'll video the rocket falling on a tank. And they'll put that out there as propaganda.
Weren't they live feeding like the whole attack, right? They had cameras running.
So those videos and stuff are hard to come by.
Right.
They get yanked off of platforms like YouTube. Twitter is a little more lenient. I was able to sneak onto some Telegram groups, jihad Telegram groups.
Has them, right? They let them stay up. I haven't seen any of those videos.
Telegram doesn't really care. I was able to get onto some groups, like jihad groups, so I'm able to see the perspective of literally like the fighters and the Arabs, how they're communicating about this. And they're also sharing certain gruesome stuff that we won't share. So you see what's really taking place. So we know that it was a major, like, how did it happen?
Prepared.
So
they were very well prepared, and somehow they kept really quiet. The intelligence community knew nothing, apparently.
Yeah, it seems like they knew nothing. But physically, the way that some details that I just learned was that, so they had about 35 of these rockets. I already saw a video. You see, it's like a drone, and it drops a rocket, an anti-tank, and it hits the tank. Then there's videos where they yank out the soldiers. They're killing them. They're doing all this stuff. But they also I didn't know this. They also did this to the surveillance cameras. So for hours, they didn't actually have surveillance of what was going on.
They didn't know. Right.
Okay, right. So they did that. The guns, it seems like the guns may be M4s from Bing, Ding, Ding, Ding.
Yep.
So thank you, Biden.
Yep.
And they're thinking that Iran must have helped because there's a certain level of sophistication that took place, even though it was very old school planning and execution. And part of what people have to wrap their head around here, and I think what's so shocking to all of this is that the delusion of security because of their technology and their fences and their iron domes, everything we discussed, there's a level of complacency underestimating willpower of human beings and what it means to ram through a wall and run in.
Yeah.
And
exactly.
And they captured a Hamas dude. I was just watching a video from Laser Brody. He was saying this. I didn't see this myself, but he said that the guy was saying that they were surprised that they even got this far. That they couldn't believe it. You know, they were expecting they'll be shot
right
down.
Away, soldiers, right. So there's a lot of, besides the idolizing that a lot of Israelis do, and perhaps rightfully so at certain times, but I'm telling you, over the past 30 years, there's just been a degradation of preparedness and readiness. And it's not me saying it. I'm not a professional whatsoever, but there's this mythical understanding of like the Israeli army. But the fact is that when you don't have actual real wars, it kind of degrades because you're not producing new stuff, new equipment, better armor, better guns, better bullets. So Israel has, you know, the stuff they have, you know, some good fighter planes because they still bomb all over the place. So I sent you that video. You should watch it. It's about 25 minutes long, and it's a reservist general who had a job. And this is from 2 months ago. Look at the headline of the Kotelet.
What did he say?
Yeah, you sent it to me.
He writes literally in the wording of the video, this is 2 months ago, that there's going to be massacres. That's what it says in the header. There's going to be massacres. Sahal is not ready for a war. This is what he writes. And it's a 25-minute interview where he's going through all of the unpreparedness and the old equipment. They're not feeding them properly. They're demoralized. All these army bases, everything's run down, everything's old. He did a full tour of the country, north to south, east, west, and he's still active. And he wrote up an entire report. Is he saying this in his video?
Did he submit it?
Submitted it. And this is a typical bureaucracy. He submitted it. The person he submitted to, oh, wow, really? This is like, it's this bad, you know, like what's going on? He brings it into the politicians who are really in charge of the military. They yell at him for fear-mongering. And it disappears. Like, report's gone. He gets, like, sent down to a lot or something. Literally, this is his words. And even when I watch it, I'm like, okay, it can't be that bad. Like, it's Israel. It's the Israeli army. Like, they're careful. They're on top of things. And, you know, I want to send my son to the army. And when you hear this, you're like, why would I want to send my son to the army?
What is it, a day camp?
It's right. What the heck? And 2 months later, you watch, it's eerie because he goes through scenarios of what's going to happen. And I'm surprised, like, more didn't happen. Like, I'm surprised when this was going on that there wasn't an uprising in the West Bank.
Well, there were little ones, but not huge ones.
Imagine if 50,000 young men from Jenin poured out into Modin or something. You know, it's crazy. They live so close. There's nothing blocking, and from the north and from Hezbollah, like if like it was a full on disaster from all sides. They took over a police station. They were killing cops. They were killing soldiers. They were, you know, it's. So not everyone has their eyes closed. The problem is you run into the wall of politicians and bureaucracy and they don't want to hear it. They don't want to hear it. I bet you that video is going to get popular. Watch now. And I watched it then. I was a little skeptical. I'm like, it can't be this bad. It's this bad.
I heard 15 days ago, Netanyahu said how strong the military is and how suppressed and afraid, you know, the enemies are, and
they're not. They're not.
Level of, okay, maybe that's
delusion. It's weird. It's a weird delusion. He's busy. Startup nation, tech nation. Where the you're surrounded. You have people living within your borders who want to kill every single one of you, men, women, and children. If you don't get your identity right, your identity straight, that you're a Jewish country and this country belongs to you, period, then what are you doing? What are you, startup nation? They'll kill you and your startup nation. They'll burn all the buildings in Tel Aviv to the ground. It's not about the settlements. It's not about just the, they want all of it. They want
the land. They want you. They want all Jews and all Americans and everyone.
Now that they're, because people like can't even picture it because something want this bad has been a long time, but they've shown that they want to kill everyone. Because people think it's hyperbolic. No, they're not going to kill all the. Usamer thinks they're going to kill all the Jews. Yes,
every single one. And if they had the opportunity to kill every single American. Okay, so this is interesting because
on that whole
on this topic, there's that notion of people sympathizers and supporters celebrating all over the world, you know, and cheering for Palestine,
right.
Which is a crazy and fascinating phenomenon, because like you were saying earlier, this is going to get people, and it is. Actually, I'm watching online people who never spoke out against Palestine because they had an opinion formed by propaganda and everything are now finally saying something. Not, you know, all, but a lot of people. So you're seeing a turning point. People are starting to see, oh, this is Hamas. This is what we're supporting when we support rockets flying into Israel, whatever. But then again, at the same time, you have rallies and support rallies all over the world, from New York City, Paris, everywhere, supporting Palestine. Just utterly, utterly shocking to watch.
Well, it's shocking, but it's not so shocking. It's just, it is what it is. You know, you live in New York, you think you're going to be told, be oppressed.
Here's the question. You're just coming online. You haven't seen the videos yet. I don't even know if you want to. People have seen the videos coming out. And just to be clear,
They came
into little towns and shot up entire families.
Yeah.
Took entire families with babies, grandparents, elderly, everything. Raped girls in front of dead bodies, and then took other girls through Gaza. You know, drag them through the streets half naked, sodomizing bodies. I saw a video of them literally hacking, butchering a Thai Israeli that was in one of these kibbutz with a gardening type of just going at him.
They're absolutely savage people. They're medieval people.
Barbarians, right? Just gruesome, the stuff that's coming out. So the world sees this. Sane, moral, ethical people are speaking out, and there's a ton of support for Israel, blah, blah, blah. And then you have the people at the rallies. So this is what I'm trying to understand. Now, okay, Arabs cheerleading for their brothers and their family and their team, I understand.
Because
we always go for our tribe. It's so deep that you have to be really intellectual to get out of that. Americans, Harvard University students condemning Israel for the violence, you know, educated American, obviously lefties, are standing at these rallies supporting Palestine when they see what Hamas just did. Mind-numbing.
Yeah.
How do you even begin to wrap your head around something like that?
If you believe in certain things. You have people like Jimmy Dore, others, Max Blumenthal, Jews. He's a Jew, he's not a Jew. Regardless, they have a certain view of Israel, which we haven't really discussed in the other videos also, how a lot of Westerners view Israel. They view it one way, and that way is apartheid, oppression, genocide. If you believe that the Israelis are committing genocide on the Arabs living in Israel for 75 years, this is kind of like, okay, so they're getting some payback. You can do that switch. Just like, this is what the Jews do to the Arabs for 75 years. So now they're doing it to them.
So there's like a cognitive dissonance, because those same people, those white American young college students, would be butchered by these same people.
For sure. They would. So,
mind-numbing.
They don't care. That's right. But they do believe, and I watch some people that do talk on YouTube, and I, you know, they have views that I agree with, like here in America, the politics here. And they have views about Israel that's shocking, not shocking, but like I know how they think, and they really think Israel's a genocidal apartheid, you know, just a murdering country all day long. So they can excuse. I think they can. I don't know if everyone. I haven't heard them talking about this stuff, but they do feel that way about Israel. They do. You know, they were going after RFK Jr. for having a positive view to Israel. But what about the apartheid? What about? And he's like, there's an Arab Supreme Court justice in Israel. There's Arab parties and Knesset members. And like, what do you mean apartheid? But they just have this view.
Unfortunately,
apartheid, genocide.
everything else basically stems from just plain and simple ignorance.
These videos are savage. This is Genghis Khan level, Mongol level, you know, 800 years ago, what they would do to a city of 500,000 people, and they did many times over, all over the world, you know. But this is on a small scale of that type of savagery from once upon a time that you would think the world is moving past. And then you see it rear its head and you wonder, okay, humans are humans. And humans can be put back into that primitive state, however advanced you think you are.
Yeah. On that note, there always is, and I already saw a video this time around as well, an Israeli also desecrating the body, I think, of two of the terrorists.
The terrorists.
Pissing on them, you know, standing on them and giving the middle finger. So you always have, you know, even by the Jews, you'll have some people who are not ethical and moral, you know, and they're angry and all that. But it's just despicable.
The way you started out this whole conversation is about this discrepancy. And I was thinking about it a little bit, and I'm sure there's going to be videos and people talking about it, rabbis and others. You do see a different set of morals, you know, Arabs versus Jews in how they fight and how they behave themselves and how they do things. They do this. This behavior is a, in Hebrew, a lechatchila. This is how they're going to war. This is what they're doing. So children, girls, boys, it doesn't matter. Grandmothers, the Arabs. It's a savage, it's a primitive, just a really wild, and that's their, and they believe in it morally. It's ethical to them to be this way. The same way the Mongols didn't think they're doing anything wrong in how they conducted themselves in war. They would come, they would say, give up, and everyone walks away in peace. Submit yourself to us. If you don't, this is what we're going to do to you. And then they did it. It wasn't idle threats. So it was ethical to them. You decided to fight us. It was biblical in what they would do to cities.
That's why I was saying it's all rooted in ignorance.
But Jews don't fight that way. And the Jews, you know, in Israel and any other place, they could if they want to. They have the power, like if Rashida Tlaib or Jimmy Dore, any of these people that hate Israel as an apartheid genocide, they can kill every single Arab in Israel. They have the capabilities to do it. But they're not doing it. And even when there's a war and they have to go in, they're so careful. They don't have to be careful. They could carpet bomb Gaza now. I think they should, but they're not. So it's a very weird genocidal state that's not doing all it could to commit genocide. So it's that logic is very weird and twisted, because they'll still say
the psychology and history of this phenomenon. There seems to be a pattern that we have to like get worse, 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 and then you have world support and the everything you need inside the energy or whatever. I don't even know what the word is. Yeah. To be barbaric. Like, ooh, we drop a bomb on Hiroshima. So it's like, ooh, okay. So it's like, what do we wait?
All the way up to the worst.
Now we can maybe go kill Hamas fully and completely. What? You couldn't do it, you know, the first time it shot a rocket in?
Why?
So it's right. Be a phenomenon. They did say that it would be disproportionate responses this time.
That's what they say, but he always threatens. Well, one more time, what I'm gonna do to you. No, we're waiting.
The Taliban got excited. They said they're ready to conquer Jerusalem if they were allowed safe passage. Everyone gets
all have to wake up. Like I told you a long time ago, that there's this food, besides the security notion that we discussed over here a little bit, how Israel views its support for its vaunted military, which I love, Tzahal also, but I also love everyone having a gun. Every capable adult should have a gun, and especially if you're down there, especially if you're, let's say, if you're living in, you know, Petah Tikva, you should, but like, especially if you're living there, it's not even a question. All these communities
should be a law.
100%. There should be pillboxes in Sderot with 50 cows loaded, locked and loaded. 100%, not even a question. It would have been a whole different ballgame. Whole different ballgame. It would have shut down. It would have stopped. They would have stalled as they're.
They would never get so far.
Because they would never get so far.
Gun battles. Here, what you had are families and even the fathers who would typically be holding the rifle, all running and trying to save their family and
running away, trying to save their children. Stick.
The amount of terrorists that were hitting up these little towns was not so many.
Wasn't so many. First, when the rumors started coming up, people were saying 3,000 terrorists came over the border. It was maybe a couple hundred.
Right, and in each kibbutz, so if you have 10, 20 guys hitting up a little kibbutz, all you need is all the men with rifles to shoot back.
It's a militia that comes together in a time of crisis to defend your thing. What do you have? There were like three cops sitting at the police station? It's horrible. Besides that, there's also a delusion in Israel that we have discussed in the past, and I think it needs more discussing. How is especially city dwelling along the coast of Israel, Tel Aviv for sure, that whole coast, Chulon, Ashkelon, Ashdod, all these places, especially for the north where they don't get rockets, Netanya. They, especially over the past, you know, 20, 30 years, and again, since there hasn't been real wars, they think Israel's it's gone. That's it. It's past. It's beautiful. It's the Middle East. You're living in a beautiful, you know, on a coast. It's oceans. You forget, and you think you're in Miami, and you think you're in Los Angeles, and you want to walk around with Gucci bags and shop at the mall and have all these stuff that Westerners have, right? Cafes, still restaurants. It's such a mistake. And this, again, this is that sick, sad reminder that Israel got, the world got now, the Jewish world got now. But I've been saying it, and people have been saying it. Listen to Moshe Feiglin. Like, when you listen to certain people, they're like, you're in a slumber. You're in a jungle. You just fell asleep. But the lion's coming, the puma's coming. You're gonna get bitten.
and in their case, it's their neighbor. Literally,
they're right next door. They're miles from them, and they're, you know, they have nothing to lose. They're desperate people. There's no economy there. Everyone's poor. Whatever money comes in goes to munitions and rockets. They have a very strong ideology, very religious. They don't care. Startup nation, high tech nation, whee! this is what Israel's in the slumber of this, and I hate it, and it always bothers me, and it always worries me. And then when this happens, you're like, you're almost like you're waiting for this to happen, and then it happens. It's horrible, but like you almost expect it, because why not? Why not? Why shouldn't they do
it? I've been preaching lately, the past year, about the notion that politics is this type of thing that it's a drug for people, and you get so consumed by it that it's down a theoretical path. And I keep arguing that all the politics goes out the window as soon as you're in a life and death situation. And the examples that I was using before this happened was, look at COVID, how quickly we were ripping each other apart in Walmart for tissues. Do you think for a second people won't kill each other when there's something bigger going on? And what you see is that politics, all the blah, blah, blah theorizing of how to approach, it all goes out the window when you're dealing with barbarians, when you're dealing with people. The only thing that matters is that you have a force multiplier to try to protect yourself and your family. Otherwise, they're dead. And this should give people a little bit of inkling to like rely less on ideas. We like to philosophize all day and geopolitical stuff and sociology behind reasoning. But at the same time, I understand all of that's out the window the second somebody's infiltrating my fence. And I think the way that the world's going, we're getting so deep into ideas, especially Western world, we're like you say, we're so comfortable, we're just going shopping. The rest of the world, the place where they're teaching violent ideology, they're not in that fantasy. They're in the barbaric mindset, and you're not ready for that. You're not ready for them unless you literally prepare and understand these concepts and ideas and train and practice for it. And here we are. So,
again, if you live in Cleveland, then you don't need to. I'm not saying that nothing bad can ever happen in Cleveland, but if you live in a place where you're not surrounded by a population that wants to kill you and your whole family, then you don't have to live that way. But when you do, how foolish is it to pretend like you don't? I don't understand.
We've seen in situations is the people who understand it and were prepared survive, at least the majority of them. So the ones that don't are the ones that fought to their death. And the other ones were just mercilessly, savagely killed and desecrated. Yeah. And in this world, it has always been that way, and nothing changes that. When I went to Ritamim, especially, you know, I went for a couple of Shabbos, but right away when I saw that I was serious about moving, and I'm supposed to be going back in exactly just under 2 weeks to move into our new home, which, by the way, that region, if you look at the map, there's
right
a map
on the edge of the West Bank. You're right on the edge of the West Bank.
No, we're further down. We're like, if you look at the map where all the rockets flew, they went as far as Be'er Sheva. Some went even past Be'er Sheva.
Pretty sure Ritamim is right on the West Bank.
We're lower than that. No. We're past Dimona. We're past Be'er Sheva. We're lower than that. And Ez is Yerucham. So I lived in Yerucham till now, and I'm moving to Ritamim. Hardly, if any, rockets fly that way. Why? When I moved, I told Sharon, I'm not even going to consider anything that's like really close to Gaza or where they aim the rockets. Not because, again, if there's a war, there's a war. But I don't want to live under the constant sirens and the constant stuff. And enough, they're not shooting rockets all the way out there because they're not going to hit anything.
Oh, Meitar, and I was thinking, because you went to Meitar, and I knew that was right on the, that's on the line of the West Bank.
And it's just a interesting fact as that whole region beyond Dimona is pretty quiet. I think Yerucham had alarms go off once, but you know Ofakim to Ritamim. I mean, if they got as far as Ofakim that quickly, it just shows you it's nothing. So what am I saying? So I start realizing that I'm going to be moving there right away. I'm doing a perimeter check. I'm checking the fence line. I'm asking some questions about how they do security there. So they do their nightly drive. But I realized right away, and this is Israel, and this is what we're talking about. Yeah. There's such complacency. Like, you think one guy in a pickup truck driving around at night is going to stop something. One guy with a rifle, two terrorists with a rifle, you're done. They'll go house to house. There's just no concept that your neighbors are there to kill you. And for some reason, Americans, and it may have something to do with like what you said, that we have the self-preservation mindset. Americans see it more than the people living there.
We feel much stronger about this, the individual taking care of ourselves. And it's a good thing not to rely so much and have this kind of delusional idea of what the government is capable of. And Even presidents having lied, like a JFK, you know, ask not what you can, what the government can do to you. Just ideology like that. Let me type it in. Ritamim. Let me see.
You know what? There's the channel Active Self Protection. Forget about a big terrorist attack. On Active Self Protection, he covers these little attacks. Not these attacks, like robberies and stuff like that. He has it down to science. And one of the things you learn from
watching... You're closer to Gaza than Yerucham was.
Yeah. But you see, they don't... Oh, you don't see the map, but I'll show you the map where they shoot the rocket.
Oh, where the rockets went. It's because
they don't shoot it. There's nothing there. It's empty. It's
empty. Right, right.
Anyway,
No.
Not just terrorism. When somebody's robbing a store or somebody holds you up at gunpoint.
Yeah.
One of the things that he teaches, and he has it down to science, to very particular principles you have to learn about protecting yourself. And one of the main things is that nobody's coming to help you. There is no help. You're in a situation like this. It's only your prowess. It's
you and what you understand and what you can do, what you're capable of, and what tools you have to help yourself.
And I think that's like one of the big takeaways. But let's see what happens. It's in a certain sense, we all want Hamas to be wiped out once and for all because it has to be done. If
Will
that
they
takes
do it?
A lot of people are going to die on both sides. And it's just devastating. But if it doesn't happen today, it's happening tomorrow. It's going to take place. So we're just sitting here, like you said, nothing that you could really do watching this unfold. And if nothing happened and they just bomb and this goes away, just a bunch of cowards that ultimately just pay a higher price and a higher price until, like I said, you reach the peak. At some point, you'll reach the peak
somewhere where they're going to nuke Gaza. They're
right.
just going to carpet bomb it, wipe it off the, and they don't care what the world has to say, because they'll keep doing this until they kill enough people where Israel says, okay, no more.
So I'm not a huge fan of wiping it out completely because tens of thousands of innocents, millions of innocents.
Millions. There's a million, 2 million people here.
But if there could be a massive invasion, 100,000 door to door,
maybe split it up, build, you know, concrete walls and just split the whole thing up into like seven neighborhoods. Break the whole thing apart so that it's just all like small counties.
You know, like in the West Bank, there's a lot of politics about settlements, but they live better than they live in Gaza.
Right.
If Israel has full control of Gaza and we're supplying them electricity and food, and over the course of the next 2 decades, it kind of stabilizes without the ability for terrorism, it's better than what's going on now. It's better than this cycle. Anyway, these are ideas. We can talk about this ideas endlessly. Ideas, like I said, ideas are ideas. Meanwhile, get a gun and protect your family. Otherwise, you're dead.
It goes back to that. It goes back to that. It at least gives you the option to do something. You know? I hope never attack in my shul, but if there is, you want to believe that you had some way of protecting it. And imagine if I don't carry 1 week and something does happen, the rest of your life, you'd be like, maybe you could have done something.
I used to tell you before you had your license, take your gun to shul anyway. I was just by Bubby in Texas, and she says she's not a fan of registered guns. She couldn't believe I'm on a road trip without a gun. I'm like, sure, I'll go pick up an illegal gun in Newark, and when I get pulled over, I'll tell the cop that my grandmother told me it's a good idea.
Yeah, she said it's registered.
But even in America, we have to
so like to finish out this whole thing, do you think this is a pivotal point for big change in Israel policy, in Arab Israel relations, in all of this, even on this, even carrying guns, even our local militias, do you think that a lot's going to change?
You're asking if it's the 9/11, as people are saying, of Israel. Because that's what they said right away.
Unfortunately, it's worse.
I'm not talking about the ratio of death. I'm just talking about how it's going to change things. If I think so, potentially, I'm seeing signs of it, but I don't know. You know, I don't predict. I do see signs because I'm noticing some things are different than past cycles. Very different. And I'm watching closely. Like I said, I'm on a lot of groups. I see a lot of the stuff that's taking place almost live, almost in real time, much quicker than it's interesting. I didn't know that they put a gag. That actually makes sense because I wasn't seeing the big news outlets.
Nothing was coming out. They didn't have any updates. They're posting stuff now from 2 days ago.
Right.
260 bodies found at this music festival. That's already Shabbos they found that.
Some of the channels and stuff that I'm on, I'm seeing things probably within minutes or hours of them happening. And so I'm seeing signs that are a bit different, but we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, there's no point in guessing anyway. Whatever happens,
Hamas is not wiped out this time, we're going to have to do it next time. And next time, that means there's going to be more losses.
That means something worse. Yeah. So, all right.
That's all right. Have a good night.
Leave a like and subscribe. Subscribe.